This is immigration law 101 for the layperson, which means that I'm not going to go into case law or very detailed information. It's just an overview for your information. This lecture is not for lawyers, okay? So let's start. How many of you have immigrated to the United States? Me, I did. Okay, so we have a lot of immigrants, right? Okay, and let me see your hands again. Okay, so what country?
Ghana.
What country?
Ghana.
Yeah?
Ghana.
Uh-huh.
Ghana.
Ghana. How about you?
China.
China? Taiwan or mainland?
China.
Mainland. Now, I asked you that because we have some certain quotas that's going to affect one country, not the other. Who else? Well, how about you?
Morocco.
Uh-huh. And you?
Hong Kong.
Hong Kong. Well, how about you?
Singapore.
Hmm?
Singapore.
Singapore and?
Vietnam.
Okay, great. So we have a variety of immigrants from a variety of different countries. So I came from China, and I learned English as a second language, okay? Now, I came from China because my father was a U.S. citizen, okay? So how did you come here?
My father.
Your father's a citizen? Or you marry somebody who is a citizen?
No, actually, it was some sort of an adoption.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody else want to say? How about you? Your mother's a citizen or permanent legal resident. You could also come here as that. Okay. Anybody came as a spouse? Anybody? My mother came as a spouse of a U.S. citizen. How about anybody else? How about a child or your parents are citizens or permanent legal residents? Anything? How about you? Are you? Did you raise your hand before? Okay, your parents were here. Okay, so we have a variety of different ways that immigrants have immigrated to the United States. Okay, so my presentation today will provide an overview of the United States immigration law, but it does not constitute legal advice, okay? Because every situation is different. So please consult an attorney for your individual situations. I do not practice immigration law, so I won't be able to help you in terms of if you need help to apply for a visa. Okay, I could tell you general information. Okay, I teach immigration law. There are plenty of good immigration lawyers, and if you need it, I could tell you where to go look. Okay. Okay. So the first page. So follow my your PowerPoint. Okay, and. Those who will not have it will, as soon as that gentleman make copies. Okay, so what was the immigration policy during the early years of America? At first, all immigration to North America was open. During the colonial period, people were able to come to America and establish roots without restriction. It was only after the European immigrants had established themselves for several generations in what was to become the United States, that American immigration policy became restrictive. Some people came to America of their own free will. Others were forced to come to the U.S., such as convicts and slaves, and others who fled religious persecution. Others came to search for better opportunities, such as to improve their economics and social standing. And most of us came to the United States for a better life. I know my parents did, right? Most of you did also, I'm sure. The unrestricted immigration policy during the colonial period was based on the availability of uncultivated land. Once this uncultivated land became more limited, the early colonists decided to restrict entry to this country. In general, laws were enacted to exclude convicts, lunatics, prostitutes, the diseased, paupers, and the insane. Now, I use the word lunatics because that's the word that they used in those days. In 1882, the Chinese Exclusion Act specifically excluded all Chinese from immigrating to the United States, as well as persons who were convicts, prostitutes, lunatics, and idiots. And that was repealed in 1943. In 1929, the immigration law based on the national origin formula was passed. Okay? Now, what was the national origin formula? Okay, it's very important because in 1929, it used the ethnic background of the entire population to determine immigration limits. So a total quota of 150,000 immigrants was established, and because of the ethnic makeup of the United States population, 85% of that total was allocated to people from Northern and Western Europe. So let me paraphrase in a different way. The national origin formula was based on people already here. So people already here were not from Ghana or from China or from Korea or from Russia, right? It was the people that were here in 1929 were people from Western and Northern Europe. People who were English, they were French, they were German. So what the United States government did was they took that population and say, okay, that was based, so the people that we're going to let to come in into the United States will be based on that population. So of course, most of the people that they let in were English, from England, from France, and from Germany, right? Because that's what the population, that's why we call it the national origin formula. And it was not until 1965 immigration based on the national origin formula was finally abolished. Okay, so during all that time, the majority of people that were permitted to enter the United States were from Northern Western Europe. In 1990, new employment visas were created as well as non-immigrant categories. All right, so you're going to say, well, what's the difference between an immigrant and a non-immigrant? Are you telling me that non-immigrants can't come over? Well, an immigrant wants to stay in the United States permanently. And ultimately, they want to get a green card, right? It's no longer green, by the way. Have anybody got the green card? Any new green card holders? They changed it. Do you have one? Isn't that green, right? Is it green?
No, the one I had was light green, the earlier one, not the present one. The one is...
It's not green, okay? But they still call it green card. That means that an immigrant wants to stay permanently in the United States, get a green card, become a permanent legal resident, okay? A non-immigrant wants to stay in the United States temporarily for a limited time. So the United States has different types of visas for immigrants and non-immigrants. Okay, I'm going to talk a little bit about non-immigrant visas a little bit later on. But a non-immigrant would be someone who wants to come visit. You know, they want to stay for 2 months or 3 months, right? A non-immigrant visa could be a business person that will come and do work for 6 months. Those are non-immigrant visas. That's separate from the immigrant visas. Okay. So on page 2 of your slide, I'm going to talk about family-based immigration. Okay? Immediate family members are given priority and have no quotas. Okay? Who are they? They are a spouse, a child, but a child who is unmarried and under 21 years old, and parents. Okay? Yes. Okay, no, but that's not, no, that's not it, right? That's not, those are preferences. I'm talking about immediate family members. There's no quotas. Okay, so if you want your spouse to come, or you have a child, okay, a child is unmarried and under 21 years old, and your parents. So there's three members of your family who's considered to be your immediate family, right? And they are spouse, child, unmarried child under 21 years old, and parents. That's no quota. Okay, now, on your page 2, we have family-based immigration, okay? The first preference is your unmarried sons and daughters over 21 years old of U.S. citizens. So you can say, well, I have three children. You know, one is 18, and one is 21, and one is 22. Your 18 is under 21, is considered to be an immediate family, whereas your 21 child who's unmarried, okay, has is first preference. All right, okay. So your second preference, okay, all right. There's two second preference. Okay. So let me give you some numbers. Okay. First preference: unmarried sons and daughters over 21 years old of United States citizens, 23,000 visas plus any numbers not used in fourth preference. So that's the difference. Okay. So if you have unmarried sons and daughters over 21, they have a limited number of visas. Okay. The second preference, which includes 2A and 2B, okay, is 114,200 plus the number by which the worldwide family preference allocation exceeds 226,000, and any numbers not used in first preference. Okay. And the second, and 2A is spouse and unmarried children under 21 of legal permanent residents. Okay? Okay. And then you have 2B, and you have third preference, married sons and daughters of U.S. citizens, 23,000 plus any numbers not used in first and second preference. Okay? So the key is, if you have sons and daughters, they're going to be a different preference than your immediate family. That's basically the bottom line. And there's like a limited number. Okay. Now, if you notice, why do you think unmarried children and spouses of legal permanent resident have a higher preference than married sons and daughters of U.S. citizens? Okay. Anybody can take a guess of that? If you look at the third preference, is the married sons and daughters of U.S. Citizens, they have a lower preference than sons and daughters of permanent. Why is that?
I guess maybe because as far as like more people, like they're eventually going to have a family and, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right, okay, you pretty hit it. I think the point was to keep, when you have a child under 21, you want to keep them together. Whereas when they're older, they have their own family. So that's part of it. Okay. And then you have fourth preference, siblings of U.S. citizens who are at least 21 years old. Now, we're going to go into the web, and we're going to look at, in terms of how do you figure out how long the wait is. Okay? And we're going to do that in a little while. We have the capability going to the web later? Okay. All right. Now, we're going to talk about employment-based immigration. Okay? All right. Now, we have first preference. Okay? So the employment-based immigration has certain numbers of visas. Okay? Visas are issued for a particular group of persons with specific skills and given preferences depending on the type of work. So the first preference is for a priority worker. It's 28.6% of the total worldwide level. It's about 40,000 visas they issue. Okay? So you're going to say, well, what is a priority worker? Okay? They are persons of extraordinary ability in the science, arts, business, or athletics. Okay? Persons of extraordinary ability. Some example would be, I would consider Oprah Winfrey to be in this category, Bill Gates in science, all right, Nobel Prize winners, all right. So those are persons of extraordinary ability. Now, also included under the first preference is outstanding professors and researchers, certain multinational executives and managers, okay, and must have been employed for at least 1 year in executive or managerial capacity and at an overseas office of company that has affiliated office in the United States. Okay? Thank you. Okay. All right. So that's the first preference. The second preference is professionals holding an advanced degree. Any academic or professional degree above a BA, a Bachelor of Arts, okay? Or persons of exceptional ability in the sciences or business, okay? And for the first preference, okay, you don't need a job offer, whereas the second preference, applicants must have proof of a job offer to come. You need labor certification. It has to be advertised. I have to go to the Labor Department, okay? For the second preference, job offers can be waived, okay? It's called a national interest waiver. If the work of the immigrants is in the area of substantial intrinsic merit, okay, and that person provides a benefit that's national in scope, and the immigrant must be capable of serving the national interest to a greater degree than would a qualified U.S. worker, then the job offer could be waived. All right? So the first preference, when you are extraordinary, you don't need a job offer. The second one, you need to have a job offer. So you're going to say, well, what's the difference between persons of exceptional ability and persons of extraordinary ability? Right? I think I gave an example. I would think that Oprah Winfrey would be an extraordinary, right? Exceptional is more than the average, a little higher than the average, but not a Nobel Prize winner. I would say Nobel Prize winner would be a priority worker on the first preference. Okay. The third preference is skilled workers in short supply. Professionals holding a BA degree. Okay, so the second preference, you have to have more than a BA. The third preference is you holding a BA. Okay, so skilled workers in short supply, professionals holding a BA degrees, and other works in short supply. Okay, it's and the number visa is 40,000. Okay, examples will include computer analysts, scientists, and guess what? Domestic workers. Under this category, okay? If you could show that you can't find a domestic worker, you could use this category to bring someone over. But it requires going to the Labor Department, labor certification, all right? There was a case years ago about a family that wanted to use this immigrant, and they hired, they wanted a living person. And they claimed that they couldn't get anybody that's live in. So they had to advertise. And they got a lot of applications for people who want to work but not live in. And the immigration service says, no, you know, that's your option. You want to live in. But we had a lot of people that were in the United States that were available to be domestic workers. Okay, so preference three is in short supply. Fourth preference, okay, certain special immigrants, that's 10,000, comprises of religious workers, employees of U.S. government abroad with 15 or more years of service, and certain employees of international organization, okay? All right. So priority workers, the first preference had 40,000 visas, okay? The second preference has also 40. The third is 40. The fourth preference is 10,000 visas. Okay? And then you have the fifth preference. Okay? And that issues 10,000 visas per year. And the fifth preference is, well, we call them the investor visa. And it is comprised of investors who will create at least 10 jobs by investing in a new commercial enterprise benefiting the U.S. economy. And the minimum investment must be $1 million or $500,000 in areas of high unemployment. So if you have a lot of money and you want to invest and say, I'm going to create at least 10 jobs, you could come under this visa. And that's 10,000 visas per year. Okay. Now, it's not so easy that you could just come and say, well, I'm going to invest $1 million. They're going to ask you for a business plan. All right, and you have to show them how you're going to create the 10 drops. So it's not as easy as I'm making it out to be. Right? Okay. Any questions so far? Okay, I could take questions later. All right, now you have diversity visas. And this visa is also called the Annual Visa Lottery Program. Okay? All right. So in 1995, the Immigration and Nationality Act, the INA, that is the law, immigration law, okay? And it's still the immigration law. What they've been doing is amending it. So in 1995, the Immigration and Nationality Act established an annual visa lottery. Natives of certain countries selected by a mathematical formula are able to compete for visas in this category. The numerical limit on these types of visa is 50,000 per year. Okay? So they pick out 50,000 and they issue visas. Okay. So 50,000 per year for people from countries with low rates of immigration to the United States. All right. The applicant can apply either from within the United States or from outside the United States. And you're going to say, well, how are they going to apply this if they in the United States? If you come here as a non-immigrant, as a visitor or business person, you could still apply, right? Or you could apply in your native country for this lottery. For 2010, natives from these countries were excluded from the lottery, okay? And they were excluded because the immigration rate is already high. And they are Brazil, Canada, mainland China, Colombia, Dominican Republic, Ecuador, El Salvador, Guatemala, Haiti, India, Jamaica, Mexico, Pakistan, Philippines, Peru, Poland, South Korea, United Kingdom, Russia, and Vietnam. People born in Hong Kong, Taiwan, Macau are eligible. They're eligible for the lottery, but not mainland China, right? Okay, so okay, then you say, okay, so we'll just put our hat. Now, there's some qualification. Each applicant for a diversity visa must have a high school education or within the past 5 years have had 2 years of work experience in an occupation requiring at least 2 years of training or experience. Okay. Now, I'm giving you this information. Of course, you're not going to become lawyers on this. This is just information for you to know. So when you decide to, let's say, bring your relative over, at least you know. You can say to them, how about the visa lottery? Can, right? You know that. Okay? Now, applications must be submitted electronically, and paper entries are not accepted. After the application period, a computer will randomly select cases from among all the applicants from each geographic area. If a person is selected, she or he will receive a letter with instructions on how to complete the application, how to follow up, okay? This is extremely, extremely hard to get. They issue 50,000 visas, but just think how many millions and millions of people put in there. It's extremely hard. So the chances of you getting it or a person getting it is really very minimum. But you still have a chance, right? Okay. Now, the geographic area, they put it in area. So it'd be Africa, the countries from Africa, Europe, North America, okay, which includes Bahamas, but not Mexico or Canada. South America, Central America, and the Caribbean are all in one region. Okay, those are geographic area. And they put all the applications and they start doing, you know, the computer will pick up the applications. Okay, so the next PowerPoint are non-immigrant visas. Okay, so as I mentioned before, okay, an alien who wants to enter the United States and stay temporarily does not intend to become a permanent resident or seek U.S. citizenship are issued non-immigrant visas. Okay, so there are many of them. It goes from A to Z, but I'm just going to highlight the most common. All right, the first one is the B1 visa. Okay, a B1 visa is for a temporary business visa, visitor granted to foreign business people coming to the United States for their foreign employer. They are also issued to self-employed individuals who need to conduct business in the United States, such as attending meetings, meeting customers, or negotiating contracts. Labor certification is not required. That means it doesn't have to go to a labor department where the immigrant visas, you have to, for employment, you have to go through an advertisement, a labor certification has to be issued. This one doesn't because it's just temporary. Okay, the second one is B2 visas. B2 visas are issued to people coming to the United States to visit friends or relatives, to vacation, or to accompany B1 visa. That means that if you're coming here for business and you bring your wife or your husband, they have the B2 visas. Okay? And upon entry to the United States, the alien is generally admitted for 6 months. Okay? Now, we hear of the term used, illegal aliens and so forth. The term is used very broadly. So if you have a non-immigrant visa, like a business visa or a visitor's visa, and you overstayed the 6 months, okay, then the immigration service will say you're an illegal alien because you stayed beyond your time period in the United States. All right, F1 visa. Now this is really... at St. John's, we have a lot of students with F1 visa. Anybody here with an F1 visa? That's for students, right? Yeah. Okay, so F1 visa is academic students who are enrolled in an academic program in a high school, college, university, and are issued an F1 visa for the period of study plus a period of practical training. Spouses and children may accompany the students, but they are prohibited from working while in the United States. Okay, so F1 visa, they could do work in a sense that has to be related to their major. Okay, so you're majoring in restaurant management. You probably could work certain minimum number of hours in restaurant management, all right, because that's your major. An H-1B visa, and there's also another visa for vocational students, if you're doing training with electricity or something, but F1 is generally academic. Okay, so if you're at Hunter or BBM, Manhattan Community College or St. John's, you would get an F1 visa. Okay, H1B visa, okay, generally available to aliens in specialty occupations, professionals who have at least a bachelor's degree or who have certain relevant work experience, okay. It is issued for 3 years and can be extended for additional 3 years. So the H-1B visa is a very desirable visa because you can stay here as a non-immigrant for 6 years, okay? And not only that, after 6 years, you may apply to become a green card holder, okay? So I have some of my students who's completing their degrees. I advise them to try to get an H-1B visa because that's a visa that you could renew for 6 years, and then that you could seek to become a permanent legal resident and get your green card, and then afterward become a U.S. citizen. All right. So non-immigrants may become permanent legal residents, green card holders, through adjustment of status. Okay? So my example, a student on the F1 visa may adjust his status to an H1B visa if she or he meets the qualifications to obtain the visa. H1 visa requires labor certification, so you need to have a company or an employer that will sponsor you, so issue the H1B visa. This H1 visa, you could go from, it's transferable, so you could go from one company to another, right? And it's good for 6 years. It's a very, very desirable visa. And they issue amount $65,000. Now there's a bill. Yes?
I just have a question. In regards to the...
H-1B?
Yes. So if they apply for that visa and the company allows it, because you're working for that company,
They have to sponsor you and they do a labor certification, yeah.
So if you have a contract with that company, but you move to another company which is paying you more, let's say...
Yes, it's transferable. It's transferable. Yeah, it's transferable. You could transfer that.
Is there like a specific contract stating that you have to work for the company before you can move on?
Okay, that becomes very specific. So, but I could give you a general, is that it's transferable, is that your other second company could just pick it up and file it. It's transferable. So you don't lose it if you're moving from one company to another. Some people with H-1B, they think that they can't move, that they're stuck in the company, and that's not true. Okay? Okay, so... Now, the H-1B visa is aliens in specialty occupations. Okay, so you could be a computer analyst. And all you need is a BA degree. Okay, at least a BA degree. Okay, so I want to just talk a little bit. So there are many more non-immigrant visas, which I'm not going to talk now. Maybe, you know, later on I have like a lecture part two, because when I teach this course, it's a 5-month course. There's a lot of things I'm not discussing because of time. But there are many more. The ones B2, the B1, F1, H1B are the most common. Okay. All right. So again, if you have a non-immigrant visa, you could always do an adjustment of status to get an immigrant status. Okay? All right. What is the now, there's a very important date. It's called a priority date. Anybody hear that? A priority date? Okay. The priority date in a visa is a date used to measure when an approved application, okay, to... the Department of Homeland Security has been received and determines how long you must wait. So for all those visas, specifically the immigrant visas, when you file the application, you get a priority number, a priority date. Okay? For example, if your priority date is January 1st, 2004, and you call to check the status, immigration may tell you that they are issuing visas going back to 2000. You now know you have a long wait, okay? Now, if you say, if they issuing visas going back to 2000, I'm 2004, so I only have a 4-year wait. Wrong. It could be much more because it's, you know, there's a lot of people involved. So, but I'm going to show you how to check it. So the United States Citizenship and Immigration Services, okay, is a website that you need to. Okay. So this is a very, very useful website. It has forms. Okay. Go in the pop. Okay. You have TPS. Who knows what TPS is?
Temporary
protective status. That was issued when Haiti had the earthquake. Okay, the government issues that when a persons living in this country can't return back to their country because of either earthquakes, floods, or so forth, and they permit the undocumented aliens here to stay. They won't deport them. Okay. There was no protected temporary protected status for Japan. Remember when they had the... yeah, they didn't have that. But they did have it for Haiti, and they also... Okay. Yeah. So these green card, okay, they have... has anybody heard of this site? This is really good. It's on... You could Google it, right? Let's see. You could file your application online. You could become a citizen and file your own paper. Okay, you don't need to go to a lawyer and pay $5,000 to become a U.S. citizen. You could do it on your own, right? Okay, and here it is. How to apply for citizenship. Okay, help my relative immigrant. You fill out those forms. Renew, replace my green card. Okay. All right. So, are people, anybody here familiar with this site, or is this the first time you're seeing it? Most of you, right? Okay.
I have a question. Excuse me. How long does someone have before they have to renew their green card, or does that depend on the country?
Well, you know, you don't need to renew your green card. You have it, right?
Oh, okay. Well, no, because it says renew.
You apply for green card, renew, or replace my green card. Maybe you leave the country. What is it? How many years?
It depends on the
year. One at a time, sir.
When they give you the green card, it has a validity period of 10 years.
Yeah.
So after the 10th year, you might.
You might. But you become a citizen by that time. That's why I never have to question renewing, because if it's 10 years, you could become a citizen after 5 years, right? So why would you want to wait?
Because of the cost, a lot of people don't.
Oh, I see. Yeah. You got it. Okay. All right. That's fair enough. Yes. Right.
And even we got a temporary green card, which is for 2 years.
What card?
There is a temporary one that they give for 2 years.
Oh, okay.
If you are married to.
Right. It's a temporary. Right. If you were married, it's right. It's a K. The visa is K-1. It's for fiancé, and you have to be here for 2 years. They give you a temporary one because they want to make sure that your marriage is not a sham. Okay. that's a little different. Yeah, right. But so if you marry someone from who's an immigrant, they have a 2 year sort of conditional permanent resident, okay? But in general, my advice to everyone is that I can't walk. Sorry. My advice is that if you could afford it, you should become a citizen right away, because you have many more benefits as a citizen. You could apply for federal jobs. You can't apply that with a green card, right? So everyone should. Don't bother renewing. Just become a citizen after the 5 years. Okay. All right. Okay. Can you get to me the visa bulletin next?
Oh, is there a question?
Yes.
I want to find out, if you are a permanent resident and you marry someone who's a citizen, do you automatically become a citizen, or do you still have to file for your citizenship?
Okay, you still have to. You're not automatic, right? Your children who are born here will be automatic citizens, but not you. So I know there's questions. So after I finish speaking, I entertain individuals, okay? So again, I can't give you legal advice. I could give you general guidelines, all right? So we'll hold off questions, okay? All right, now you have the name Visa Bulletin, all right? That's how you're going to check your visa, like your family's visa, how long you have to wait, all right? So this talks about the statutory number, keep on going, all right? This is what I basically said, talks about the number, keep on going. Okay, so, all right, this is the family sponsor preference, okay? So you have, the first is unmarried sons and daughters. Don't forget, sons and daughters are 21 and over, right? A child is 18. A child under 21 has no quota. Those are your immediate family members. So I used to remember a relative of mine always saying, I have to get my son here because he's going to turn 21 soon. Because once you turn 21, you face a quota. You have weight. Okay. So, and second, right, spouses and children, unmarried, sons and daughters are over 21, a permanent resident. And then there's two. Okay. So there's two of them. And then the third preference is marry sons and daughters of U.S. citizens. Okay. So again, if you know, the F2B, you're going to say, well, the F2B, unmarried sons and daughters, okay, 20 were a permanent resident, and then you have the married sons and daughters, all right? So the so what they want to do is keep the family together. And once you start getting married, they consider you to be a separate family. That's why they have a lower preference, okay? And then you have brothers and sisters, okay? All right. Okay, so this is the chart. This is for November of this year. These are family, okay? So what it means is, okay, so these are your preference, all right? And okay, so this means that all these countries, except for these countries, so if you're from a country that's not listed here, then they are processing the priority dates July 22nd, 04, and before, okay? That's what they're doing for other countries not listed here. So if you're from Peru, okay, and you're in the first preference, FA means family, it means that they're processing it here. These are specific. These dates are different from those dates, okay? Mainland China is 04, India, and so forth. Now, if you look at the F2B, they're processing it 03 and before. Okay, so if you file an application, the priority date is 2011. Okay, don't be misled. Don't say, oh, I only have 8 years. It's much longer than that. Okay, and then you have here the F4, that's siblings. It's 2000. Okay, so you could go in there and look at it. But you don't need to go to a lawyer and pay them money to do it. You know, you could do it. Just Google it or here's the website there. Okay. Let's now go further down. Okay, this is employment based, right? That's what we discussed before. That's the employment based. Go up. Okay, so so C means that it's current. That means that they're processing probably 2011. It's current. C means current. Okay, so let's say you have a PhD, right, and you're from China, mainland China. You're born from mainland China. And your priority is November 1st, 2011, okay? And you are on the second preference, okay? So remember what the second preference is? It was for what? Degrees, college degree and above, right? You look up here, and they're processing the priority numbers, visas, prior to November 7th, 2007, all right? So that's what, so you go through each one. Religious workers, all right? Okay, so if you look at your PowerPoints, we have the different preferences. Okay, now, the first preference, what do we say? The priority workers, right? These are extraordinary. Look at that. They're all current. Can we see the countries? So, right? They're all current. So if you are extraordinary ability, you don't have to wait that long, right? The second from Mexico and Philippines is not so bad either, right? Okay. But the other workers, the third preference, okay, is skilled workers in short supply. You have a long wait. All right? So anybody know about this website? Have you heard about it? Okay, so now you could go look at it, right? Okay. Okay, so I'm going to talk a little bit about citizenship, all right? And then you could come and ask me questions. Okay, there are four statutory requirements to become a U.S. citizen by naturalization. Okay? So naturalization is you actually have to file the papers and become a citizen. If your children were born here, they don't have to file papers. They automatically are citizen. All right, so the fourth statutory requirement is residence, right? When I say alien, I don't mean someone from space, but a non-citizen. An alien means a non-citizen, okay? The alien must be a resident of the United States for a period of 5 years, okay? During this 5-year period, the person must have been physically present in the United States for at least 2.5 years, okay? And the residence cannot be founded on an illegal entry into the United States. Okay, that means that you're here for 5 years. That doesn't mean that you can't ever leave the country. You can, okay? But the total time has to be at least 2.5 years, okay? Let's say you get a visitor's visa and you stay for 5 years. They say, oh, I'm here 5 years, I could become a citizen. The answer is no, because your presence in the United States were illegal. Okay? All right. You have to be 18 years old to apply, or the parents can apply on behalf of the minor child. Okay? You have to have a literacy, must be able to demonstrate an understanding of the English language and a knowledge of American history. And 4, you have to have good moral character. Okay? So let me go back to what does continuous residency mean as it applies to citizenship. It means that a person must have been physically present in the United States for at least 2.5 years, but the continuity is not broken by absences up to 6 months. So you could go back to visit China for 5 months, it's okay. But if you exceed your absences more than 6 months, the immigration will say that it's a break. Okay, so you can't do that. Okay, absences from the country of more than 6 months but less than 1 year create a rebuttable presumptions of a break in continuity. Okay, an absence for more than 1 year conclusively destroys continuity, and the alien must complete a new period of continued residence. So if you leave the country for more than 1 year for whatever reason, okay, and the immigration said, no, you know, that breaks it, you're going to have to start all over for 5 years. Okay, if it's less than 6 months, it's fine. If it's between 6 months and a year, it becomes difficult. But if you could explain, you could say, look, you know, my mother was ill, you know, I had to go, all kinds of reasons. You have a question? Somebody has a question?
Does it mean that even though you have a medical reasons, for example, you're very sick, You have to stay in that country that you're visiting for like at least a year to heal, you know, to be able to get back to the U.S. Does it mean that
you have a break? Well, you have to convince the immigration people that why did you need to stay a year at that place? You know, if you could say, well, there's only one doctor could treat my illness, I think that would be, you know, reasonable. But they're going to ask you why you need to stay a year.
You can't afford to pay for the doctor here.
I see, you have medical reasons.
Yeah.
Well, it's the burden is on you. The burden is on you to show, to provide a reason. Okay? You have a question?
Yeah, I learned about the abandonment, like when you overstay for 1 year, it's like you have...
It's a break. You break it for 5 years. It's a break. It's continued to be a break.
But you could still come back.
Yeah. Yes, you could come, but then you have to stay. You have to. It's a break. You have to start all over then. Okay. But if you go out between 6 months and a year, then I think that that's not a break. Then you just continue, and then certainly less than 6 months. Okay.
So there is. What about if you stay for 1 year? You still got your green card?
But 1 year? Are you saying one year? 1 year or 1 year more than 1 year?
More than 1 year.
I think that the the immigration will consider that to be a break. They will, unless you have good reason. You know, if you could show that you know you were ill and you needed some treatment there. Okay, your question?
Just more clarification.
Okay, you know, let me finish. Okay, I'm almost finished with that, and then you could come up and talk to me, okay? Okay. We're talking about if a person is over 55 years old, all right, and who have resided as a legal permanent residence for 15 years, or a person who's 50 and who lived in the United States for 20 years is exempt from the language requirement. They don't have to speak English, and an interpreter will test them on the knowledge of American history. Okay, so you know, if you know someone who's been here a long time, like my parents, they were here for a long, long time. They didn't speak a word of English. Okay, but they were over 55, so they didn't have to take the language. Okay, now the fourth statutory requirement is moral character. You have to have good moral character. Well, what does that mean? Okay. Now, the immigration law doesn't define moral character, does not give you a definition. Okay, but what it does tell you is what constitutes lack of good moral character. What isn't good moral character? So here's some of the examples they give. A habitual drunkard. Now, I don't know what habitual means. You know, if you have two drinks, does that mean you're a habitual drunkard? I mean, but this is what they say. A polygamist. A polygamist means someone who has more than, you know, one spouse, right? Now, this is very interesting in terms of polygamists. If you come from a country where polygamy is accepted, and you come here and you say you're not going to practice polygamy, that's all right, okay? Okay, receiving the principal source of your income from gambling. Okay, these are examples of lack of moral character. So if you have any of this, okay, 5 years prior to filing the petition for naturalization, they're going to turn you down because you don't have good moral character. Found to have given false testimony to obtain a benefit under the immigration law. Okay. Convicted and jailed for 180 days or more, or any time convicted of murder. Okay, so those are examples of lack of good moral character. And there's many more, but I'm giving you some examples of that.